listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. Today's show is brought to you by Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin, a nonprofit, member-owned health plan providing high-quality health care and health insurance services to over 85,000 members living in South Central Wisconsin. And before we get started, I want to give one last shout-out for our million-dollar advertising promotion. So, It starts tomorrow at 9 a.m. It is for free advertising. So if you own a business, if you work at a business, or if you know somebody that would benefit from free advertising, have them go to civicmedia.us. And the most important part is tell them that the Empowered Caregiver sent you. So on that note, as my husband would say, Liza, less talking. Let's get to the sex part. So without any further ado, I want to announce Monica Lynn, a relationship and sex expert. Sex expert. That might be a reach, but you'll get there, right? A sex therapist. And that's based out of Seattle and a bestie of my co-host, Kristen Voss. And we are here today to talk about how to strengthen your marriage and build intimacy while being a family caregiver.
Really excited about this opportunity to get two of my favorite people together in an opportunity to talk about a really fun topic, sex, intimacy, and relationships, right? And we're going to talk about the fun parts of that, but also some of the challenges. So, Mon, I know your background, but why don't you take a moment here to introduce yourself to our listeners? Just tell them a little bit about yourself, your background, and the organization you're affiliated with, please.
Okay. Well, first, thank you so much, Monroe and Liza, for having me. This is such an honor and fun to do. So I'm really excited to experience what you put so much work into. So I originally was an accountant. I was headed towards my CPA, and I was told by the people in the last job that I was on that I laughed too much and I laughed too loud, and could I please limit that? So I realized that that was not the job for me. So I went back to school. My dad was sending me articles by a guy that named Gordon Dickman, funnily enough, who was the great sex educator in Bellevue at the time. And so I went back and thought, that sounds like a lot more fun. So I went back and got my teaching certificate and my health degree, and I started teaching sex ed and health at the school where Kristen and I met. So I had 10 years of that and just teaching teenagers, and really, really enjoyed that aspect of education. Then I stayed home for a while with some kids and was doing my fitness and nutrition stuff that I did in the evenings. And then several years ago, I decided to go back and get my master's in psychology to be a therapist, because I've always wanted to be a therapist. And it just seemed like a natural fit to be a sex therapist, because there's not a large number of them, but there's a large need. And so I was really lucky. I got to get hired by a place called PNW Sex Therapy Collective. And I work with two of the most cutting edge sex therapists in Seattle.
Well, then, Monica, I stand corrected. You are a sex expert. So we are super excited to dig right in. But since this is a caregiving show, I just wanted to ask if you had a personal experience with caregiving.
You know, I feel I have to be humble in that I don't. I don't do anything to the degree that both of you do. And then I watch so many other people do. So I want to just be really honest about that. My dad had Alzheimer's. He died of that. And so I watched him for 8 years. So I watched my mom take care of him up until about the last year and a half when he was in a home. So I've watched other people do a lot of caregiving. I watched Kristen, but I don't have a ton of experience myself other than raising three children and that kind of stuff.
Right. Which is still important. But I do think that one thing I love about you is that you've always been sensitive to the fact that being a family caregiver has caused me to have a different type of extra load than many of our peers who are parents. And it's not to say just parents, but it's to say that having to care for somebody with special needs does come with some extra work. So, all right. People are really wanting to talk about sex, right? Especially in Wisconsin when it's cold and there's been a bad snowstorm and everyone's trying to get through the winter. So I think what's really going to be percolating in a couple people's mind is, what is a sex therapist, Monica? What does that mean? And when do you suggest people consider seeing one?
Okay. So a sex therapist is, there's an organization called ASEC that people can get certified through. It's a really rigorous process. It's kind of like getting another master's. And that is the organization that you get certified through to become a sex therapist. And mostly what you're doing is talking about all issues of sex. So it could be sexuality, sexual orientation. It could be sexual assault. It can be communication and sex in relationship. It could be rupture, infidelity, betrayal. It's the whole gamut, anything really to do with sex. And then also just all the relationship part. And, you know, every single one of us is a sexual human. So there's really, everybody could see a sex therapist, because I think that all of us have issues related to it that at some point or another comes up and bubbles up, and we could benefit from, you know, exploring those things. Yeah, I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay, sounds good. And I know when we were prepping for this interview earlier, I think it was last week when I talked to you and I said I wanted to have you come on. And I was like, what are some of the things that you think you would talk about with our audience? And you said that you think it's really important for caregivers, especially when they're dealing with care recipients that might have health issues, to recognize that there's different types of intimacy and that you wanted to teach us about the different types of intimacy. So here you go. Here's the mic. Lay it on us, girl. And I know you're also trying to get me to understand this on a personal level. So I'm listening carefully and taking notes.
Well, there's definitely more than just five types of intimacies. I mean, there's different, you know, different gurus that we'll talk about up to 16, 18 different types of intimacies. But I think five of the most common would be, if we talk about emotional intimacy, that would be like the intimacy that you and Liza share. It's the stuff that you and I share. It's what we share with anyone that we know on an emotional level. And then there's another type, which is intellectual intimacy. So since I don't know Liza yet, her and I are just sharing intellectual intimacy, right? Because we're talking about a topic and we're, you know, having that kind of attention towards each other. Then there's physical intimacy, which can be non-sexual. So like as kids, you might wrestle with your siblings, you give like hugs and things to your children. So physical, non-sexual. And then sexual intimacy obviously is of a romantic nature. And then energetic is the one that's the most confusing for people to understand. And I'd like to explain it to people as, you know, like if you're at an airport and you were in the security line and it's just a sea of people, you're not really paying attention to any of the human beings really, other than this one is it your turn in line. But you might see like an 82-year-old little man that has like a little twinkle in his eye and he catches your eye, or maybe a 2-year-old little girl is peeking out from her mom's legs and kind of flirting with you or playing peekaboo. Or it could be somebody of your same, you know, age and similar more to your attraction level, but there's something that causes you to lock eyes and feel something energetic between the two of you. So there's no emotions being shared, no talk, no intellect, no physical touch, but there's something that's a felt sense. And so those are kind of the five like most important intimacies that I like to refer to. And I think one thing to remember is that that energetic piece is sometimes what people confuse with sexual chemistry. And oftentimes that energetic intimacy that we share is a really lovely, really fun dopamine hit that we get with people. And to understand that it is separate from sexual intimacy and doesn't have to be confused with it. Can it be? Yes, absolutely. In relationship, it's an important part, but we can also have that isolated from all the other types.
That's really interesting. Thank you for taking the time to explain that. I have one question. I'm familiar with the love languages, and I'm sure that you're familiar with that as well. Can you tell us the difference between, what is the difference between the types of intimacy and the concept of the love languages?
Right. So intimacies, like those five intimacies, are things that all of us want to share with all humans, not all humans, but with, you know, in our life all the time. And if you have a partner, you kind of hope that you have all five of those with that partner. Whereas love languages are more like the one or two ways that we find most rewarding to receive or give love. And love languages also, I think it's important to remember that you may give love or show love in a different love language than you like to receive. So somebody may like to show up like for like love languages are acts of service, gifts, words of affirmation, quality time, and physical touch. So also five things. Somebody might like to give acts of service because they really like to help people. But when they want to receive, maybe they like to really receive physical touch. So it's just important to understand like how you like to give and how you like to receive. But that all five of those intimacies we talked about are really things that we all need as human beings.
Okay. And so let's try to bring this back to being a caregiver, right? And so when you think about family caregivers, the people you've seen in your life, I'm sure you've seen some in your office. What do you think is important for a family caregiver or even a family? Well, okay, sorry. What do you think is important for the family caregivers to understand about these love languages and the different types of intimacy? Where do you see that intersection happening?
I think, great question. I think the thing to remember is that for all people, so the caregivers are going to want to have all of those intimacies, but they may not have the same amount of energy for all of those types of intimacies. So it's really important to incorporate that into, with a lot of intention and communication. As far as the love languages, I think it's important to understand the difference between the golden rule, which is do one to others as you would have done to you, and the platinum rule, which is do one to others as they would want done to them. So if you're a caregiver, and you are somebody who really likes to hear words of affirmation about how hard you've been working and what you've been doing. If your partner is somebody who likes gifts and they are like giving you flowers and you're saying that's not great, but I don't want flowers. I want to hear how much you appreciate what I'm doing and how I'm showing up. Then it's important to understand what your partner or what the caregiver, how they feel love, how they receive it in a love language. So you can give them a platinum gift, not just the golden rule kind of gift.
Okay, that totally makes sense. I've never heard about the platinum rule, so that's interesting. So it's the idea of learning what your partner wants in love.
Right. Yep. Okay. And meeting them where they want to be met, not giving in the hopes that they'll give back in that same way.
Okay. Or not that hoping that they'll give back even in the way that I want. It's just really recognizing that if I want to connect, if I want to be able to show the appreciation, then I need to understand how they're going to see the appreciation and feel it.
Right.
Why do you think that's so important? Real quick. Why do you think that's so important for a caregiver to consider?
Because the caregiver is going to be exhausted and needs to be refueled and rejuvenated. Right. And so if their partner knows how they can be rejuvenated, that's going to make a big difference in their quality of life.
Excellent. We're going to come back in just a moment to talk a little bit more about how to handle that exhaustion of being a caregiver and be in a relationship.
To the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with Monica Lynn, a relationship and sex therapist, about how being a family caregiver can impact a couple's or individual's sex life. So, Monica, not have been a caregiver yourself, I will let you know that there's two types of tired. There's tired, and then there's caregiver tired, where you fall asleep while you're loading the dishwasher kind of tired. So my question for you is, how do you deal with the exhaustion of being a family caregiver and still show up in an intimate relationship?
Yeah, great question. I think that probably one of the most, and again, because I'm not a caregiver, I just want to say that I'm guessing here a little bit, but I would think one of the most important things is to be really self-aware or attuned to yourself. So knowing where that line is, like you said, like, am I tired or am I at the point where I'm about to fall over because I'm so exhausted, and kind of being able to know, am I getting close to that? Being able to understand where that spectrum is for you so that you can start externalizing that to the other people in your life so that they understand, you know, I'm at a 10. And that means like, I can't even have this conversation with you right now. I need to do some self-care. So I think increasing your self-awareness and self-attunement is probably one of the most important things, because nobody else can mind read or guess where you're at. Another thing I would say is, like, in any relationship, whether it's your partner relationship or your children or your friends or coworkers or whoever it is being able to name that you don't have the bandwidth or the capacity at that moment to do whatever it is that someone's asking of you. So if somebody's saying, hey, can I have some of your time or can I have a phone conversation, to be self-attuned enough to say, I have like 3 minutes of capacity right now. Like, whatever you want to do, I can do, because I can tell it's important, but my bandwidth is so low. I only have about 3 minutes right now, you know, and being able to communicate that, because it's not me. It's not selfish. When you're a caregiver, you only have so much. So being able to tell people, you know, where you're at, I think can be really important.
That does
yeah,
sound
I
like
agree
a,
with that.
A great idea. I don't know about the 3 minutes part. Now, if I told my husband I only had 3 minutes, he would be like, eh, fine, I can make that work. But definitely good advice. And I love how you number the tired meter. That's wonderful. I am going to take that one home with me.
Yeah, unfortunately for your husband, I think you're taking home a lot of comments and advice that he's not going to necessarily.
Yeah, Monica, what kind
about.
Of other therapy do you do?
Yeah, exactly. But no, in all seriousness, that is great. And Mon, you've helped me personally with that whole idea of a bandwidth before, and I've heard you use it with me, and I love it. And so I think that's just a really attainable. I like it when people in like therapists and educators can give a obtainable goals and aspirations for people to actually try. And so I think that I really want to encourage our listeners to consider that. The next topic we're going to get into is a little intense. I think it's at the root of so many relationship issues, and particularly when family caregiving comes involved. It's this whole idea of resentment, right? There is a great deal of resentment that develops in a partnership when caregiving is involved. And I'm thinking about it from all the different angles of caregivers that we address in our audience. This can be true if you're caregiving for your spouse or partner, right? There's a lot of resentment around the fact that now I have to take care of you in a different way than I expected to when we were gonna partner together to be equals. There can be a resentment that starts developing when somebody's caregiving for an aging parent and their partner has to take a back seat, right? And what Liza and I can relate to is being a caregiver to a child and feeling that that division of labor isn't equitable. So what do you think is at the root of resentment in intimate relationships? And probably more importantly, how do you work on that in a therapeutic session?
In a therapeutic session, I think what I would be doing is have people lay out what it is that they are doing in that division of labor and duties and really spelling it out more granularly. Because when you sign on for something, you know, this is an easy one to explain. It's probably very different in different types of caregiving. But if I said, I will clean the kitchen every night, and you cook, because that was our skill set.
Right.
I didn't take into consideration that when I clean the kitchen, I can tune out, I can listen to music, I can do my thing, but the person who's cooking has to have mental processes of meal planning. What do we have in the fridge? What do we have in the pantry? Going to the grocery store, all that. It's not actually equitable anymore. So I think that getting granular about seeing like these are two chores, yet are they actually equitable in time and energy or not? Because if they're not, then there's going to be resentment from the person who is taking on more. So I think part of it is getting really more honest at revisiting, kind of like a budget. You have to revisit a budget. You have to revisit the division of labor and duties. And then the other thing I think is just getting really transparent about how you feel. So resentment can sometimes almost feel powerful as we store this ammo up in our bag, you know, of like, I'm mad at them because I did this and this and this, and I have all this ammo, and there's some power to be held within that. Whereas if you go to a transparency and say, I'm feeling some inequity and I just need to share that with you because I don't want the ammo. I don't want to collect this. I don't want to fire this at you later because I know it actually negatively impacts our relationship. I would rather be transparent with you now and let you know that I'm feeling the resentment starting to build would be an important way to approach it.
But then how does the person who receives that respond, right? Like I can imagine someone telling me, well, I'm, you know, getting resentful. And it's like the moment I hear that, I'm going to start, you know, bristling and get on the defense. So how do you help couples in that situation recognize that sharing and being transparent about resentment isn't necessarily something that they need to battle over?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a reminder of the fact that whoever's complaining is going to get the light. So if one person complains about something and the other person answers that with their own complaint, they're not going to get the time for that. Like you're going to listen to the first complaint and the second person's complaint is going to get lost. So if I'm with a couple, you know, then I can say, let's just focus on this first one. Let's really hear what's going on. Let's listen and reflect and hear what you're saying. And then when it's your turn and you get to complain about something, then you will actually be heard and listened to. So it's a process of showing them, how do we do this in a way that lets both people be seen and heard if we slow it down?
We could do a whole show on communication, and I can't wait to talk more after this short break. Our Caregiver Show, and we have been speaking with Monica Lynn with Balance Life and PMW Sex Therapy Collective. And we ended the last segment talking about conversation, and I kind of want to go back to that, but on the more, let's just say, intimate level. When it comes to having a conversation with your significant other about, you know, what it is that you need or you want, is there an effective way to do that? Because I'm kind of thinking about my personal experience, and I've got like my husband being, you know, like 100% dude, right? I've got like the football coach approach, like, hey, you know, huddle in. I need you to go down a yard and do the Statue of Liberty, and you know, and then I'd got the kindergarten or preschool approach where it's like warmer, nah, and you're cold. You know what I mean? So how do you communicate your intimate needs, and what do you do if those kind of conversations start to go south on you?
Oh, good question. Okay, two things come to mind. One is just that. If you're talking about just sexual intimacy, you know, that may be a more loaded question of how do we communicate and how do we do that with comfort and transparency, because there's so much, you know, sexual taboo and things that have religion and things that cause people to feel shame or discomfort with it. But I would back up one step and say, when you look at those five intimacies, the emotional, intellectual, physical, non-sexual, sexual, and energetic, having a conversation with your partner first about which one feeds me the most. So you might have a partner that says, you know, I don't feel access to my own arousal until I feel emotionally close to you. So that if they're knowing that, then the person knows, well, we need to have some type of conversation. I need to ask how your day was. I need to be able to, you know you and build safety and trust. I always tell my clients, we only have great sex when we have safety, trust, and we're relaxed. I would imagine for a caregiver, feeling all three of those things at the same time is really difficult to access. So it's understanding your partner's arousal access, like where's the on-ramp to that? And so if you're able to understand, yeah, I actually need a little bit of non-sexual physical touch first, or I need a good conversation first, then that's part of the ability to transparently communicate that. And then during that time, being able to give feedback and say, you know, like, yeah, that feels really nice, or this feels so good to be able to be asked about. I feel so seen and heard from you asking me about my day. And backing up even another step, if you're a caregiver and you both have separate chores, switch chores sometimes, because maybe one person gets stuck doing one thing all the time and you think you know what it is, but you don't really know until you switch them and really understand what it's like to be in the other person's shoes. And that could go the same for sexual intimacy or romantic intimacy as well. If you normally, approach your partner in a certain way and are doing the same thing, but you don't know what it feels like to be on the receiving end of that, switch. Try to do to the other what they do to you, to be able to say, like, does this feel good to you? Do you like this? And maybe their thought is like, oh, no, I guess I never really thought about it, or you hadn't done that to me. So it's a lot about putting yourself in the other person's shoes, that kind of compassion, empathy, exposure, experience, and being able to absolutely communicate what feels good and what doesn't. And oftentimes it's better to communicate about that outside of an intimate, you know, romantic scene, because people's feelings can get hurt, or you can feel offended or defensive. But if you bring it up before or after, there's usually more ability to listen.
Yeah, I learned that one the hard way. But you're right. I'm gonna go home tonight, and I'm gonna tell my husband I listened to a sex therapist. We had this wonderful conversation. We're gonna switch things up tonight. You're doing laundry, and we'll see how it goes. I'll keep you posted. But I am curious on those different intimacies. Is there a resource where people can go to learn more about that?
I wish I had one right off the top of my head for you. I mean, you can even Google the types of intimacies, but like I said, you're going to get a whole bunch of different theories because different, authors will write about different things, but all of them are good.
Sure.
They're just bringing in more complexity and getting more granular depending on how many, you know, that they have. But I think any exposure to reading more about intimacies and, you know, love languages as well, and just the ways that we can communicate about them, and looking at, like, you can Google like the top 10 sex podcasts or sex and relationship podcasts, and there's some really good stuff there. And then you can go into each of those different 10 podcasts and find the subject matter that you really, you know, identify with or that relates to your relationship the most. So there's an endless place to rabbit hole down of getting a wealth of information.
Yeah. And I think it's been really cool to see how that's developed in the last few years as people become more comfortable researching things, sharing different ideas and feelings around sexual expression, sexual identity. And so I think it's really a whole loaded world now full of information that we can learn from. So that's really cool. Talking about intimacy. Sorry, go ahead, Mon.
Say one of my favorite resources to give people is a book by Emily Nagoski called Come As You Are. And that's a really great, like, 101 book for all couples to read and both people to read and to talk about, like, what are we learning from this? You know, and there's just I think most people in this country have a real lack of sex education. So if you're, you know, in a relationship and you both read that, there's lots of like banter, food for thought that can come up, whether it's listening to that on Audible or, you know, reading it or listening to podcasts with your partner as conversation starters, I think is where it really needs to start.
Yeah. And then it does start developing those different levels of intimacy, right? Because you're starting to have some intellectual intimacy around stuff that isn't very normalized in our culture to talk about, as you mentioned.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. Monica was one of the best sex education teachers I've ever come across in 28 years of teaching. And it was because she normalized things and really made it an environment where students were comfortable asking the tough questions so that they were educated with the correct information to make the decisions that they needed to make. So kudos to you, Mon. Now we have a couple questions for you because intimacy is part of what we like to do on our show to empower people. And we call those our powerful questions. And they are the questions that we think push people to go inward and reflect a little bit on their personal experiences and thoughts. And so I'm wondering, in terms of all of the work you're doing as a sex therapist, and then maybe if you can connect it to any caregivers you worked with, that'd be great. But if you can't, it's okay. What continues to be one of the greatest challenges that you're experiencing in your work? Mm-hmm. And how do you navigate it?
The greatest challenges. I think that part of what makes my work easier to me is when I have relatable lived experience with my clients. And so the challenges probably come when I don't have that same relatable lived experience. And so there's definitely an automatic amount of compassion and empathy I can feel, but it's not always the exact like understanding of what it's like to be in their shoes. So that's probably one of the hardest things. But that just comes with asking a lot of questions and curiosity about the client.
Right. Well, and I'm thinking that since you don't really identify as a family caregiver, right? And you were mentioning that earlier. I mean, you've seen people take care of folks in your life, but what would you want? So what would you tell our audience about how they can assert themselves or get their therapist to understand this kind of extra baggage or extra experience of being a family caregiver? And I'm thinking about it, not necessarily in terms of having a kid with special needs, because as one of my best friends, you are able to sort of empathize with people because you've been on this journey with me. I'm thinking about more in terms of when somebody has a spouse that they're having to care for, and that line of, you know, wanting to still stay an intimate partner, but also having to do some really probably intense medical and personal needs.
Mm-hmm. think the most important thing for if you're going into a therapist is just to remember that that's the therapist's job. So as long as you can be as open and honest and transparent about your own experience, then the therapist is the one that's having to make the parallels and metaphors and figure out, as I'm listening to this client, how can I make this make sense to me in some parallel or relatable way? But the more information you give and the more real you are, the higher chance that your therapist is really going to be able to understand you and connect with you more deeply. If you come into therapy, and I noticed this with you, you know, Kristen, is that when you are more humble about the work that you do as a caregiver, or when you downplay it in any way, then it's harder for other people to really understand your lived experience. And so I would say that if you're going into session, you know, don't hold back. Don't feel like you can't say, this is like the nitty gritty of how I have to show up in life. And this is the part that's really hard. And these are the parts that are really great, you know, and just really letting the person, but like I had a friend that got a TBI from getting hit by a car, and the wife had to take care of the husband. And like you said, it's the spouse, right? And so there's a lot of caretaking and doing a lot of things that are not very sexy. And after time, you know, you don't see the person kind of in the same light for a temporary period of time, which can lead to a real deterioration of that type of intimacy. If you go into a therapist and you feel bad about the fact that you are feeling like your partner is no longer sexy to you, or you feel like, I can't say this, how can the therapist ever really help you or understand your position? So I would say it's being, you know, it's just like getting to the place where you know a therapist is not there to judge you. And that if you can be really real, you're going to farther progress than if you try to kind of make sugarcoat it in some way.
That's a great point. And I don't want to lose this opportunity, because when you and I were prepping for this show, it came up, and I think I forgot to put it in our questions, but you mentioned that friend, and you mentioned having to help people recognize that there are other ways to quote unquote be sexy or be intimate when it's not necessarily the traditional picture because of health issues. Is there anything you can expand on that right now?
I mean, it's hard to say because it depends so much on the person who is being kicked. Or, you know, but I mean, if there's any way with those five intimacies, are there other things that we can do? Can we lay together skin to skin? Can we make out? Can we, you know, trace each other's faces? Can we touch each other in certain ways that are still intimate, but not necessarily like, you know, penetrative sex or having intercourse, like thinking outside the box so that you're redefining what sexuality means to the two of you for either a temporary or a more permanent period of time from what it looked like in the beginning of the relationship is really important. People define sex very narrowly in this country. And it's a lot of the work that I do with my clients is how can we expand that definition? How can we make this more playful, think outside the box, and, you know, get satisfaction and pleasure for each other in different ways than what you thought of, you know, growing up as a teenager.
Do you have any resources on that? Because that might be a topic I might be afraid to Google as far as experiencing intimacy without sex.
One term, and I mean, you know, as a therapist, I wouldn't necessarily throw this out there for people to just Google and do on their own, but one thing you could bring to your therapist would be something called sensate focus, which is a way of bringing back, you know, going to a place of like touch that's non-sexual. There's five levels of sensate focus. And the first one would be to practice touch with heightening the communication about pressure and what feels good and what you like and where you like it. But it's kind of going on like a scaffolding experience of getting more and more intimate with different body parts. But the actual first four levels are not about, you know, having sex at all. It's just about having an increased ability to be close to each other, to touch each other, to communicate, to take turns so that you're not trying to do it simultaneously and your brain's getting confused with how do I give pleasure while also trying to receive pleasure. It would be something where you're maybe setting a clock for 6 minutes, you know, and one person is focusing on the other person and then you're taking turns doing that. So sensate focus is used in a myriad of different types of issues with different clients, but that's one thing that could be helpful in something like this with a caregiver.
Definitely. And one of our favorite questions is to ask our guests, what are two to three things that you wish you could say to all caregivers? So besides telling them some of this stuff right here, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I guess like use as many resources as possible that are available to you, you know, like really, really get resources so that you have the ability to find some time to be intimate with people still, because I think when your intimacy goes, it's really hard to get it back. You know, like it's one of those things where it's a use it or lose it thing, not only for orgasm or intimacy, but also for just the awkwardness of it. When people are not together in an intimate way and a certain amount of time goes by, it can be really awkward to reinitiate that. And so I would say, like, just really focusing on making it a priority to engage in some way that allows them to not have this weird hurdle to get over at some point.
Love it. Mom, we're going to have to put the rest of that on hold for a moment, and we'll be right back after this short break to hear any more final thoughts from Monica Lynn.
And life is like a song.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with Monica Lynn, who is a therapist who specializes in sex, intimacy, and relationship counseling. And I know that we got to let you go, Monica, because a sex therapist work is never done, right? You have a client in just a few minutes. So before I let you off the hook, I just want you to spell out what you were talking about before about the different sensations. Am I getting that right? So people can Google it and not go down some wrong, dangerous left turn on the Google website.
Yeah, sensate focus is spelled S-E-N-S-A-T-E. So it's just like your sensations, your sensory. So you're looking at all of your senses and sensory stuff and the different levels of incorporating that back into relationship with communication and focusing on what feels good, pleasure and graduated levels of it.
Thank you so Excellent. Much, Monica. It has been a pleasure talking with you, and it was very nice to meet you, and thank you for making time for us today.
Thanks so much, Mon. I love you. You're the best. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. So, Liza, what did you think? What stood out for you?
There was a lot of great advice. I like the whole self-awareness about where you are in your fatigue or mental capacity. I mean, that's definitely something that I am going to focus on and try to incorporate and become more aware. And then also the sensate, you know, what else is out there? What am I missing? And lastly, the switch it up. I can't wait to tell my husband to, how about you try laundry tonight?
Exactly. I know you're really thinking that's going to be a success. I don't see it happening, but you never know. He might chuckle and then he might ask you to take out the garbage. Yeah. I know. I'm trying to think about what are some of the chores that he might have, but yeah, I think it was super helpful to hear about the whole being able to check in with ourselves, no matter what the relationship is, right? Like I know the focus was having, her give us perspectives on sexual and intimate relationships. But as she pointed out, intimate relationships can be without having a physical relationship. And so they can be with friends and family members and, you know, ministers and priests and all that kind of stuff. And so I think that it's super helpful to encourage everybody to take a moment to figure out where you are, you know, in time and space, so that as we keep getting asked to do more or as we're pushing ourselves to do more, we realize, is it really worth it? Or is it going to be better for me to just let this go and recognize that I only have so much capacity and that I can pick this back up later on? And communication, right? Communication is key to all of that. I mean, that's what it's going to take for any of these relationships to work, is being able to tune into ourselves and be able to communicate what it is we need and what it is we're feeling and what it is we're scared about, you know, being vulnerable. It's tough stuff, but it's also important stuff. To me, that's kind of like the meat of it all, right? That's where the rubber hits the road. I mean, that's why are we living if we're not living to be in relationships with people and getting the most out of sharing this experience.
Mm-hmm. And understanding communication is a two-way street. I mean, when somebody's speaking, you also have to be open to listen, right? And try to put yourself in their shoes or understand their perspective, or at least let them share what they have to say, and, you know, not come back in that attack mode or defense mode, which is sometimes hard as a caregiver because we're cranky, tired people, right? So
exactly. I mean, it's hard to do as a person, but it's definitely challenging, I think, to do as a caregiver, because time is so slippery with us, right? It's that, it's not so much that we're tired and exhausted all the time. Many people on this planet are, but I think when you're a caregiver, what gets tricky and slippery is the fact that time is not in our control, right? There are so many things that come up as you wanted to start our new campaign, which is you know you're a caregiver when, right? And many of our, you know you're a caregiver when, has to do with the fact that we don't get a lot of say over our time, because hashtag caregiving happens. And you've got to stop, pivot, use your time over here, respond to this emergency, put out that fire. And then it's like, oh, wait, and I also have to still keep attending to my self-care and to this relationship and that relationship. So I think it's really important to keep that in perspective too.
Definitely. There's so much out there to manage and juggle. Speaking of things to manage, I just wanted to let the listeners know that I will be managing our website page here and putting on shortly some information about a free 6-week powerful tool for caregivers course that we are going to be offering via Zoom. Registration can start for that, or will start for that February 1st, and you can sign up on our website, the empoweredcaregivercommunity.com. And this was a course that we actually just went through the training, and it is a program that was developed through a test pilot out of Portland, Oregon. They worked on it for 3 years. It helps with caregivers deal with stress, handling emotions, increase confidence, and hopefully leads to increased use of local resources. So I can't wait to get that on our website and get some of our listeners signed up so we can meet them via Zoom in April. And then also, if you missed our show tonight, you can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course, the empoweredcaregivercommunity.com. And Kristen, you want to tell us about next week?
That's exactly what I want to do. We are going to have on Christina Martin Wright from Arts for All Abilities. She is the executive director, and this is an organization in Dane County that we just got connected with in this last year. Nicole does a drum circle over there every Wednesday night with Jim, and it is hysterical. He gets all of these different people with all these different differing needs, playing drums, having rhythm. They have like little parades throughout the building, and it's just super engaging. And then they also do a lot of visual stuff with people who have dementia and their caregivers, as well as a lot of veterans. They have a special program for veterans and helping them process some of their PTSD and emotional stuff through art. So I'm really looking forward to talking with Christina next week.
That sounds interesting, and I have not heard about them. I always get kind of offended when there's like a program or a resource out there, and I'm like, how can I have not heard about that? But speaking of that, there's one other thing that I want to make sure to give a shout out, and that's an organization called Family Voices of Wisconsin has a Wisconsin Family Leadership Institute, and they are going to be doing a family leadership training that actually goes over a course of February, March, and April. They meet a few different times, and it really helps caregivers get the building blocks to extend their advocacy for their family and telling their personal story. So you can register for that at familyvoicesofwisconsin.org. And I want to make sure to give a shout out to caregivers to nominate somebody that you know for a caregiver basket. We still have caregiver baskets we would love to be able to give away.
Yep. And so this has been just a whole wonderful bunch of information we're sharing. And we know that caregiving can get overwhelming and exhausting. So that's why we want to end each show with the positive note. You got this. And together we are stronger. So stay connected to us, and we'll stay connected to you. Night, everybody.